This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. It was 10 years ago today that a sagging power line came into contact with an overgrown tree in Ohio, tripping circuit breakers and setting off the biggest blackout in American history. 8 states and also a large part of Canada, 50 million people in all, were left without power for days. We're going to hear what's changed in the decades since and whether it could happen again. NPR's Dan Bobkoff starts our coverage from New York.
The lights went out on a sticky summer day just before rush hour.
A massive power outage has caused blackouts from New York City to Toronto.
There are streams of people who have been out here.
There's someone, a private citizen, who was directing traffic. And he was
walking around the Upper West Side, New York felt transformed with a flip of a switch. Strangers who moments ago avoided eye contact started chatting. They now had something in common. There was a mix of excitement and fear.
This is a terrorist act.
It wasn't, but it was disconcerting to see ordinary Toyota Camrys transform into stealth emergency vehicles. New Yorkers were trying to get home. No trains, so competition was fierce for buses and cabs.
Just get us to Washington Heights, man. We'll give you a lot of money for Washington Heights.
Meanwhile, Rick Gonzalez was in the Albany control room of the New York Independent System Operator, or NYISO. It's the air traffic control for the state's grid.
And the lights in the control room dipped.
Not a good sign when you're in charge of the power. Soon, it looked like a scene from a movie.
There were hundreds of alarms going off. All the transmission lines that had tripped were flashing red.
Gonzalez, who now heads the NYISO, says unlike a big storm like Sandy, his team had no time to prepare.
Absolutely no warning.
That night, when a chunk of the country was still dark, Terry Boston got a call. He was a vice president of the Tennessee Valley Authority. It was asked to be part of an official investigation into what happened. He says it came down to 3 things.
Tools, training, and trees.
Beyond trees too close to power lines, the cascading blackout was fueled by failing computer systems and poorly trained operators who didn't talk with each other. Today, hundreds of new sensors have been installed across the U.S. grid system. They're called phaser measurement units. They can help investigators figure out what went wrong, but they also monitor in real time. Boston says if they had been widely used a decade ago, there would have been an early warning.
There was about an hour of operator time that could have been used.
The power outage was also an industry wake-up call. The voluntary standards utilities had been using were no longer good enough, so Congress beefed up regulations, ultimately giving some teeth to an organization called the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC.
So we have the authority to enforce penalties on violations up to $1 million per day.
NERC CEO Jerry Cawley says his organization has already punished utilities hundreds of times, including a Florida power company hit with a $25 million fine. So the tougher rules and new technology have many in the industry feeling good about preventing blackouts in the future. But Paul Hines at the University of Vermont is not so optimistic. He says the industry is looking backwards.
We've done some things that will reduce the risk associated with blackouts that happened last time, but we probably haven't done the things that will reduce the risk of the next blackout.
Yes, he says we have those new sensors, but utilities don't totally understand what to do with all the data. Sure, trees are being trimmed and new regulations are in place, but we still had a cascading blackout in the Southwest 2 years ago.
So we haven't come up with technology or policies that will prevent these things entirely.
But Hines says we could do more, like promoting something called distributed generation. Basically, that's creating your own power to rely less on the grid. The Durst Organization does that in its 55-floor office tower in Midtown. It has a natural gas-powered generator running nonstop, producing 2/3 of the building's energy. Spokesman Jordan Barowitz says it's more efficient and takes stress off the grid.
When the grid is stressed on very, very hot days, anything you can do to lessen the amount of traffic on the grid is good for the entire system and avoids power loss.
But for the rest of us, the question for now is, what's reliable enough? The average American loses power less than 2 hours a year. Improving that even more could cost a lot of money, a cost that we would ultimately pay. Dan Bobkoff, NPR News, New York.